Hey everybody, hope you're having a fabulous day today. This is Anissa Bramwitz with the Scenario Design Podcast. How are you? Where are you in the world? I get the coolest messages from people all over. It's super cool. You ever want to send me a message, I'm on LinkedIn, find me, connect with me. That's awesome. And or join our Facebook group, Engaging E-Learning, so you can check out my Facebook Lives because I run them there all the time. Connect with new members, news about what's going on. You also get to connect with peers who are also interested in taking their learning experiences for their learners to the next level. Woo! All right. So today, what I want to talk to you about is, okay, it aligns with extreme ownership. I don't know if you've ever read that book by Jocko Willing. So if you haven't, read it because it's, I think everybody needs to read it. Not that you have to be interested in Navy SEALs, although it is pretty cool. Not that you have to be interested in the military. That's whatever. That depends on the day how I feel about that. What is important from that book? And he talks about a concept which, surprisingly, is called extreme ownership. Basically, regardless of what happens, every single moment in your life, every outcome you have, everything, you take extreme ownership of it. And you might be like, but Anna, I'm not in charge of everything in my life. No, you're probably not. Obviously, that would mean you're omnipotent God. However, you are in charge of a lot of things about it. One could be how you're going to do things next time, saying, did you learn anything from that experience where you felt powerless? However, the result was somehow impacting you. How do you want to get yourself into a position like that, right? Where you're ultimately responsible for something, let's say in a project, but in the end, it didn't turn out the way you planned. Okay, why is that? What's going on? Where are you letting the ball slip, right? And you might say, well, Anna, I'm working with people who aren't, you know, they don't want to push the envelope, or they don't want to be creative, or they're scared, or they don't get my vision. Okay, well, did you do enough? Because imagine if Steve Jobs said, well, I wanted to build the Apple iPhone, but people just didn't see it yet. Like, you got to be more than that. You got to be, you got to take a little bit more ownership than that, right? If you don't have the right people working with you, that's one thing, and that happens. That's true. But then what do you got to do next time so that the people you're working with are executing on the things that need to happen? Like, if you get something approved and you're ready to go for it and somebody says nay, well, that means you didn't do the work up front saying, do we have consensus? Have we come to a consensus about what this is going to be like, what your role is, and keep pushing. Keep pushing on things. So here's where this came from. And I mean, I'm really kind of, you know, extreme ownership. The book is more about that, more than about that. It's actually, what's really cool is, and I'm not saying that the, you know, the military mindset applies in all business. However, one of the things that I learned this year mostly is that there's no, you know, people are attached to, like, there's definitely the wrong answer and there's definitely the right answer and there's definitely the wrong approach and there's definitely the right approach. And that is not true. And that's like saying we're one kind of person and we're not some other kind of person. So let me give you an example. I'll talk to people. This is my family. We'll go someplace and my mom will say, oh, I'm not that kind of person, so she won't try something when I'm cooking with her at home. She's like, we are these kinds of people, and we eat dinner at this time, and we eat these kinds of things. And she's in her environment, and her fridge reinforces that, and her time schedule that she's set up for her work reinforces that as well. Then I go on vacation with my mom. She will eat all kinds of food she's never tried before. She will eat at all times of the day. Dinner time, what's that? She will eat when we're hungry. So the thing is, you telling yourself you're some kind of person is very, very, very circumstantial. And really, it's about the story you tell yourself in your head. This is the kind of person I am. Well, I've seen people on vacation that are completely different. It's because they're telling themselves a different story, right? And here's where this comes back in. So with Jocko Willing, what he does is he consults now with businesses. And what's cool is that he's able to take his military experiences and it's kind of like a, he has a really cool perspective. I think he's cultivated it because of the way the Navy SEALs work and how clear they are on things like, you know, if one member of the team isn't doing well, they are poisonous, they will destroy your company from within. They will destroy your team from within. I'm sure you've been there. You have this one person and everybody else is a rock star. And then you have this one person and they can poison everything. Everything. So he's a no BS kind of guy, right? He'll tell it straight up. So when he consults with these companies, he's able to, like, just like us, have perspective. You're stepping in from the outside and you have a different perspective. And also he has an approach that is very pragmatic and in our world of, you know, political correctness, where you're not allowed to say what you actually think and most people don't, where the things that we say have to be very socially acceptable because somebody might get on, you know, might get upset, then he comes in and he's like, well, this is what it is. This is the truth. And people get a little bit, I'm sure, get a little like, flabbergasted. That's the word. But then you look at him and he's like, yeah, he's just actually telling it how it is. And here's a really cool way to handle it. We might not love it. It's not, you know, civilian, as they say, but it's pretty good. Is it going to solve the problem? I think so. It's pretty sweet. So read that book. It's pretty awesome. It'll teach you some things. And also, one of the cool things that happen is, you know, it gives, when I write scenarios now, I sometimes think back to the Extreme Ownership book and how it affects some of the consequences that I might pull out of my smees, how it affects their business. It's really cool. It's really, really cool. Okay, why am I talking about Extreme Ownership in the first place? So, just yesterday, I ran a live session. And, okay, this is going to be a typical Anna moment. I'm walking on my path, as you can hear the gravel, and in front of me are two young male deer, two young bucks, and they're running through, trying to avoid all the cars and me, probably, and they're so graceful, and they're so quiet. When they run, it's like a little dream. When they jump over things, it's like effortless. It's absolutely stunning. Although where I live, I got to tell you guys, I don't know where they're all going to eat, because they're cutting in and they're building. Actually, I know what they're going to eat. They're going to eat all those silly shrubs that people put up that aren't indigenous. They're like, do you see why these forests around here survived? It's because they grew resistant to deer, and everything else that people put up from the, you know, from the market garden that they buy at the Home Depot or a Canadian Tire or whatever. Or whatever tire you use in your in your particular area. That's stuff that doesn't grow around here. And it's delicious to deer. And people spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars putting in great things that aren't indigenous. And then they wonder why the deer love it and just decimate their gardens. Because, you know, these kinds of bushes don't grow around here. And they're delicious. Oh, here he is standing right there. Let's go before there's a deer right there. Whoa. Now you're like, oh, Anna, why are you scared of deer? Because you know what? I have a dog and he's tiny, But a deer could react violently. Guess, have you seen those movies? Deer do react. Just rare, but you know, you don't want to be that first in your neighborhood. A woman gets attacked by deer. Chihuahua gets trampled. Anyways, okay. Back to why the heck I'm running this podcast in the first place. Okay, so I ran a live. And the live was about my interview system. Because one of the things that people struggle with is, how do you get the SME to tell you the right stuff so that you get what you need, right, to create a powerful story. One that's wrapped with decisions. Like, how do you do that? Decisions wrapped in story, basically. I call it an interactive episode. Because it really is, what's an episode? It's an encapsulated story, right? What's cool is if, you know, your episode is really successful at your workplace, you get to do a whole bunch of episodes that are wrapped with decisions. Sweet! Okay. So I'm running this thing, and I'm talking about how, you know, I talked to the subject matter expert, but also one of the things that you do is you talk to practitioners, like a lot, because the practitioners will actually give you the fodder for the story. Practitioners will give you the fodder for the decisions, the theme, the SME, and maybe the director, whoever you're working with, will give you the business context and focus so that you don't approach those scenarios without an agenda. The thing is, you always have an agenda with the script that I developed, because you're always trying to pull from them a really solid situation. Like, whoever you talk to, I could pick any person off the street and I could get a story with this script, with this framework that I've developed. But we have to know who we're developing for, right? So that's why the conversation with the SME and the business matter, the business owner or the director, whoever, is important, because I need that focus, right? I do a bit of my own digging, because sometimes you discover the audience you're targeting is not the right audience. So you need to, you do that up front. That's your kind of needs analysis, but it's different. It's a little bit more focused on the business. I find the traditional needs analysis sometimes focuses so much on like small, simple tasks within, like it's very tactical instead of being more broad and stepping back and saying, okay, why are people not doing the tasks? Like, this isn't hard. What's stopping them? And why do we want these people to do these tasks? Like, in the first place, right? So it's stepping back a little bit higher. That's just a really high level overview of that business needs analysis. But the other thing that we, you know, what I'm talking about is, how do I get the info out of these people's heads and get it into the heads, or get it into my script, which is my outline, which combines basically a movie script kind of methodology with interactivity. And that's where, you know, the story comes true. And I use the scripts from, or the transcripts from my interviews with the practitioners to craft that story. And some of them are better than others. Some of them are better at sharing emotions than others. And somebody wrote a very good question. They said, you know, I came in a little late, but one of the things that I just wanted to note is that the person you're interviewing has to be good at storytelling for you to get a good story, for this to work well. And I was like, yeah, but, you know, really, they have to be good at sharing emotions. And then I thought about it. I'm like, no, they don't have to be good at sharing story at all. No, they don't. And listen to this. This is because you got to make this foolproof, because that's going to be where you're taking, once again, this is where it comes back to extreme ownership. You're going to be like, my module sucked, or the story in my module sucked, because the person who told me their story wasn't a good storyteller. That's BS. Aaron Sorkin, director, he puts out like amazing stories, right? Do you think that, I mean, I'm just guessing, but if I asked the then owner of Facebook that he would have told me the kind of story that came out as the movie Facebook? Hell nah. Hell nah. Aaron Sorkin probably went around, interviewed a whole bunch of practitioners, whole bunch of people. Maybe Zuckerberg. I have no clue if he did. I didn't look into it. And then he put together a sweet, sweet story. Some things are embellished for emphasis, but mostly it's kind of like that, right? It's kind of the true story, maybe. I don't know. I think the only person, everybody has their own perspective, right? So I would have to get the perspective of like all the people that were in that movie and say, is this a true representation of you as you believe it was to be true? But the thing is, if he said, let's say he made a crappy movie, and if he said, oh, it's because Zuckerberg isn't a good storyteller, that's bullshit. He doesn't need to be. You need to pull out the details that create your beats, right? The major events. And then you wrap that up in story because you're the storyteller. You're the storyteller. You're the story master. You're the person who orchestrates that thing to create that meaning, to create anticipation. What you're looking for, and when I say sometimes people aren't good at sharing emotions and you're going to have to throw there, but you know, you can't really use as much as you need to from their script is because, sorry about that, because they haven't attached emotion to those actions. So they cannot tell you why something is difficult. And what I talked about is that sometimes you have a 5-step process, but step one, which is really easy on paper, everybody messes up. And you're like, why does everybody mess this up? What's the thing that holds people back? And it could be something that they believe about themselves. They're like, I'm not good enough to do this process to start it. It could be something like, I don't want to offend people. A lot of times sales is not about whether you can execute the steps in the sales process. It's whether you believe that sales is sleazy. That's the problem. And then you have to dig into that. So if somebody is able to share that with me, like, why do you think sales are sleazy? Like, really dig into it. And they're like, well, because once my mom bought a car when I was little and we got really ripped off. And from that day on, and my dad said, car salesmen are all the same. They're all crooks and liars. And then from that day on, I believe that. Wow. Is that the story? No. That's just an anecdotal little piece. But that's great. You can use that in your story of your hero. We're not going to go back to his childhood. We're just going to go back and attack his beliefs. So the person who said, if you're guessing it, I'm at the stairs part. One day I'll be super fit. This won't make a difference. But then you're saying, okay, this person isn't great at stories, but they're great at sharing why, the reasons behind their apprehension, why they mess up. That is what you need. You're not looking for a story. Sometimes somebody gives it to you, that's great. And you're like, oh, I can actually use this whole thing. That's great. But if they don't, it's still on to you to craft that. So how do you do that, right? Well, there's a beginning, middle, and end. The middle is usually your decisions. The beginning is the setup, which is the hero, their mundane life, what you're trying to do to connect people with your hero so they actually root for him or her till the end. And the end, which is the hero's done it. What have they achieved? What's the difference? What's the transformation? If you didn't get that from your interviews, that's fine. That's normal. I doubt Aaron Sorkin got his whole movie when he started just talking to people on Facebook. That wasn't really a story yet. And I'm certainly hoping that I have the right director for the right movie. That would suck if I kept on talking about Aaron Sorkin on the Facebook and it was like Quentin Tarantino. But I know it wasn't Quentin Tarantino, but whatever. You know what I mean. Hold on. Musical interlude. Okay. So Then you craft the story with all the authentic decision elements. You do this, and then you pitch it to them. And guys, I've pitched it. And this is the beautiful thing, is the thing that happens. You'll pitch it. And the people aren't, like, the thing is, you're not working in fiction land. You're working in context land, which is sweet. Because it's not about opinion at that point. It's going to be about truth and reality. So if you craft a good story with a compelling character, they're not going to be worried about the compelling character and the truth of the story, or the truth of that person's motivation. They're going to be questioning whether the story is accurate or not. And that's when they'll give you details. Like last time I had a meeting with my client, they said, "No, this isn't an unusual story. This is actually, like, this will happen. This is true. But nobody would say this." And I'm like, "Okay, well, what would they say?" And he's like, "Well, they would say this." So what happens is your client is now able to see the story in the context of the decisions and all the work you've been doing. And now they can give you realistic feedback on it. And if you craft your characters based on extrinsic and intrinsic motivations, and you've done enough of those conversations, which are only 45 minutes long with your practitioners, you get enough detail to start crafting a powerful character. So I want you to think that the story is always your ownership. It's your story, and somebody just gets to choose how they go through it. You're crafting it. You're Aaron Sorkin. So you can't blame the people you're interviewing on whether the story's going to turn out. You know the elements, and you're packing them together. That's like blaming your... That would be the equivalent of also blaming the person you interviewed on how interactive or how easy to use your e-learning module was. What do they have to do with it? Absolutely nothing. They also have nothing to do with your story. You're crafting it. They're just providing you with the raw materials. So you have to think about it that way. And I thought about that yesterday. I was like, because I have a framework so that, like I told you, I could go up to anybody and pull out a story out of them. And they don't even know it. They don't have to be a good storyteller. It's about the questions you ask. But there's another process that I thought that kind of made that interesting. So I don't know if you've ever played this game. It's called Cards Against Humanity. So if you haven't played it, it's actually a game for terrible people. And it is. It really is. I've played it lots. It's horrible. So basically what happens is you have a deck of cards. It's about 300 cards. And on them you have random things that are very inappropriate. Like the Holocaust, Holocaust t-shirts or something. Like random stuff that's completely inappropriate. And then what happens is you have a separate deck of cards which tells you how you're going to combine these cards together. And the person who combines them in the most fun, creative, funny manner, according to the person who's making the decision, wins. And they get to keep the points and score. So I thought about that and I thought, this is a pattern and a formula that somebody's come up with. Because imagine if you're doing this with people who are not as horrible, or very polite, and maybe three generations or two generations away from you. They don't have the same jokes as you, whatever, right? So I played this with my in-laws. Now, we have completely different senses of humor. However, because of the combinations of the cards in there, and because of this formula, because of what they provided, they came up with some really weird, quirky, maybe kinky stuff that was super funny. But that's because what we did is we stack the odds in the favor that most players will... Were they all funny? No. But most players will come up with a combo that's completely weird because of the framework that you've provided this in. And that's what's amazing. So I can play a game with grandma. She is not, interested in the same things I am. She doesn't watch the same things I do. But we're able to, have a really fun time playing something that's really for horrible people. And it still works because the framework is there. That's exactly how you need to approach this storytelling thing. They don't come up with all the funny stuff. They never will. They don't come up with the stories. That's not their job. That's your job. So you have to gather all the elements and then you mush that stuff together to create something that's compelling. All right. Extreme Ownership. Read that book. It's pretty awesome. And then write me about it. I think it's really
It's changed my perspective about how I think about things. And in the end, if something sucks, I can always say, hey, did I push hard enough? You can say you did. Like, sometimes you do and stuff doesn't work out, right? It's about the battle and the win. But sometimes that the alternative might be, hey, maybe that's a project that I don't get into next time, because it makes me feel this helpless when I have people not really work together in spite of all my efforts. If I gave it 100%, if I didn't give it 100%, well, that's that ownership you need to take and say, hey, how's it going? All right, I'll talk to you soon. Okay, take care. Bye.